Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 Houston. This is Open Journal in Exile. Open Journal is the Houston community magazine of the airwaves. Join us as Duane Bradley and Stephanie Coleman explore the wonder that is the Petro Metro and the people who make it happen. And now from our temporary, socially distanced, alternative studios in Exile, somewhere in the greater Houston area, this is Open Journal in Exile. Let the conversation begin.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome aboard. You are tuned into Open Journal. This is the Open Journal program, and we thank you for joining us and thank you for supporting it. I'm Duane Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. The internet, social media, and telecommunication are so very important to our everyday life. That's why it's hard for some of us to even imagine a life without them. Yet we are all too often unaware of the forces that seek to change the way these services work and how these changes will not only change our lives, but could also change us. Change has already come and more are coming. So we're visiting again with our friend and media expert, Dr. Lucas Logan, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown. Dr. Logan keeps an eye on all things internet. From time to time, we ask him to break it down for us. Lucas Logan, welcome back to Open Journal.
Thank you. And first of all, some good news. It's now Associate Professor Lucas Logan because I was granted tenure.
How wonderful.
Fantastic.
Congratulations.
That means you get to teach for the rest of your life?
Yes, yeah. Because I get to do this forever now.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations, Lucas. That's great. And it's a worthy uplift in your life. And I'm sure a bit of a level of some academic security comes with that.
Oh, yeah. And it's a really good time to have that security in place.
Amen. It was a really great time for me to happen to achieve Social Security status at the beginning of March as we entered into this corona time. So for those few folk listening right now who are maybe scratching their head saying, I'm not really sure what net neutrality is, as we begin this kind of wide-ranging conversation today on all things media-related and looking ahead in the communications sphere, could you just recap the whole net neutrality debate and its current status for our listeners?
Sure. I'll give a redux on that. Net neutrality is the principle that communication providers can't throttle or slow down or block or really do too much censoring as far as internet content goes. It essentially establishes the internet as a Title II service, something like electricity or the old long distance services that aren't really necessarily controlled by, say, Verizon or Comcast. They become, you know, dumb wires that let us communicate freely over the internet. And these rules were established or were invented in the mid-2000s by a Harvard professor named Tim Wu and were eventually put into place by the Obama administration or began to be put into place toward the end of his second term. What happens not long after this, of course, is Donald Trump gets elected and guts the Obama FCC, and they revoke these rules. And they say that they're basically a form of government censorship, which is a complete non-starter and is a real misinterpretation of what net neutrality was and is. Really, the debate kind of died about a year or so ago when net neutrality, as far as the Trump administration is concerned, was dead and gone. The most we're really seeing with it now is in the Biden platform, where he did issue a return to Obama-era net neutrality rules, co-signed by Senator Bernie Sanders. That is part of his kind of progressive reach out to the left bit of campaigning that he's currently doing. So that is where we are with net neutrality right now. There hasn't been much news other than that, beyond that. Whether or not those rules could ever be put back into place depends on a lot of things, including the makeup of the Senate after the next election and the fact, you know, if Biden gets elected at all. And that's pretty much where we are with that right now. There's not a whole lot else to add with net neutrality. It's hopefully something that will come back up after the election. But for one thing, you know, you're promising on or you're hoping for campaign promises by Biden to come into play. You know, it depends on the makeup of Congress. I mean, Obama promised net neutrality in 2008, and you didn't really see it until 2016, 2015, which I believe is when I first came on air at KPFT to talk about it, was in 2015. And that was after several long lawsuits between FCC and Verizon and other tech companies that took a really long time to play out. And the landscape has definitely changed since then. We're seeing all kinds of pressure right now on Congress against Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Apple that could have consequences on this, just as tech companies have gotten bigger and as communication providers have actually gotten stronger. And it's become more complicated with the idea of 5G and with moving away from broadband to more mobile services that the original Obama rules don't really even address as thoroughly as they may should or would have to in a modern landscape for net neutrality.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned I want to get into the 5G discussion some as it's rolling out into Houston right now. But you mentioned Biden working with Sanders on his telecom platform, among other things. One of the takeaways from that document says they're promising to, quote, take strong enforcement action against broadband providers who violate net neutrality principles through blocking, throttling, paid prioritization, or other measures that create artificial scarcity and raise consumer prices. Presuming that that's like a baseline, should things turn out well with our country and planet, you know, down the road of this year and beyond, how much farther do we really need to go than that, in your perspective, or will that be just peachy keen?
That really depends on what they mean by strong enforcement. What the Trump FCC did, in particular, or what he had the FCC do, was take away a lot of their ability to enforce or oversee at all anything like net neutrality and move it over to the FCC. And the FCC doesn't really do much enforcement. They'll do some things after the fact. So you would have to put something in a place where enforcement can be taken and can be taken proactively, as opposed to waiting, you know, long after the crimes are committed, or until after a broadband company has already done these things and done the damage. And so that's something that you would really need to look at there. Mm-hmm. Net neutrality also, as far as these guidelines go, it's, you know, difficult to say how effective those could be. Ideally, we would perhaps live in a world where you could trust the administration that is in place to do something as, say, as big as nationalize these lines or something like that, to where there's just a better way to enforce it and not have to worry about, you know, Verizon and Comcast and others to follow these rules after all. So I think that it's a long way to go. Net neutrality was a first step, and it's just the fact that it is not even at all in place right now, and that the technology has come so much further since then, again, with things like 5G and focusing more on mobile than broadband, that I don't think net neutrality rules would quite be going far enough as to, you know, acknowledging or fully putting into place that the internet really should be a public utility. I mean, what Verizon, Comcast et al., and even Google and Facebook and so forth provide right now, those are just public services at this point. And it's kind of ridiculous to deny that that's what they are, because we're dependent on them so much just for all of just commerce and information and how we get, you know, all of our news and resources. And we're so dependent on them that, you know, net neutrality is a good step as far as making sure that there's not too much interference on the broadband side of things, but perhaps doesn't go far enough in securing that there is a free flow of information and a fair flow of information that goes through the internet.
It's sort of disturbing to see from whence we were going one direction and now we've regressed in many ways. But what would be the worst case scenario? Should we have another 4 years? How much worse could this be? What would be, right? You know, you have to sort of go there. What will we be experiencing? Just curious. In terms of net neutrality or how we as consumers would have to pay to play on a different level with this.
Well, as it goes right now, I think that we would just keep going in the direction that we're moving in, which is, you know, more pay to play, more ability for, you know, Verizon, Comcast, et cetera, to control the means of how you pay for the internet. So a lot of the talk with net neutrality was this idea that if we don't have net neutrality, you're going to get a high tier internet where you have to pay more for access to certain information or better websites without being slowed down or throttled and not being able to view those websites as well. And then kind of a ghettoized internet that only had, you know, very basic services, which really the basic services are usually just access to Google services, Amazon, and a few things like that. You see that in parts of Europe that don't really enforce net neutrality, and in other parts of the world where you have basic services that people pay for, where they only get a few websites that they can access. And so you really do see then that class divide with the internet, and only a certain class of people being able to get certain access to certain information. Beyond that, too, you do have just the prospect of just further maybe conglomeration among these just handful of providers. So the Trump administration is sometimes, or depending on how flattering the company has been to Trump, but sometimes usually, you know, a little less that, or a little more lenient on things like on mergers and on this handful of companies that we have. We already have this kind of oligopoly when it comes to our communication providers, seeing that getting even more narrow and monopolistic as companies continue to merge.
You know, so as an educator, and now in the days of we're about to open back up for school, how do you see that impacting our kids who are now virtually learning and a part of this sort of new future of online classes? That divide would even expand into to that arena as well.
Yeah, I think that would expand into that, in that, you know, you have students who aren't going to have access to, and that's almost just like an equipment that kind of goes beyond the internet into just a class divide in general and what people can afford and access. And that is one of the terrifying things about this digital learning process, is that, you know, just some students have this set up like all of us have right now to record and talk digitally. And then you will have people in other areas, or just people in certain places that may just have a smartphone to be able to do this on, and no real access to computers and no city funding to get them laptops and this kind of thing. They'll have slower internet. One key thing, too, in that Biden-Bernie document that we referenced earlier, mm-hmm. is universal access to broadband, which, you know, does not necessarily mean that people have universal access to, you know, 4G or 5G, but to actual, you know, setups, actual broadband in the household. The Trump administration, one thing Ajit Pai's FCC did was begin to classify access to broadband as just access to a smartphone, which is complete nonsense, and then inflated the numbers for how many people actually had access to broadband. So yeah. I think with education and with making sure that that's fair, one thing you need are those accurate numbers to who has access to broadband, how well they can access it, and how much in terms of, yeah, net neutrality, everyone has equal access to that broadband, whether it's state subsidized or not. And the longer that students are learning digitally, which is, yeah, just a whole other can of worms to unpack on many levels, mm-hmm. it's really important that students are going to have that kind of equal access to broadband, or else you will have students that are just on an old smartphone that can't even access, you know, 5G, much less perhaps good access to, you know, 4G or anything like that. And so that's something that's, yeah, definitely problematic there as well, as far as education goes.
Mm-hmm. And so for our listeners, could you really, I mean, there are so many myths and stories about what's happening with this 5G. Could you explain what 5G is?
Yep. 5G, it's just really an upgrade from 4G. It makes everything a lot faster, just higher speeds, more reliability, less latency, meaning there's less lag as far as things go. It's not necessarily like the difference between 1G and 2G or 3G and 4G, where you actually add different services. So like from, you know, 1G is simply voice, and then you begin to get access to video and images and things as you go on through. So a lot of experts do dispute the idea that why are we even calling this 5G? Because really it's just much faster 4G. But that's essentially what it is a real leap in speed that you get. Right now, you'll notice a lot of companies will put things, it depends on your smartphone. You can look and you think, oh, I have 5G because the little 5G logo is there. But it'll say something like 5GE, which really isn't 5G. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure that is put up or anything, it's just kind of a scam. But what we are seeing is that more access to the actual 5G service, meaning the much faster service that we have. Of course, this has just been lauded with all kinds of conspiracy theories. I think the Corona COVID conspiracy theory with it was something that was prominent recently, where I believe the idea was that something in 5G could penetrate human DNA.
And yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the we're all going to be mutants.
Yeah, which was, you know, obviously just complete and utter nonsense. Other things that, you know, people dispute and talk about is how this can affect, you know, like weather control, our weather applications and things like that. Our ability to predict the weather affected can be affected by 5G by just taking up more of the spectrum. These things do get a little bit more complex. Essentially, the other perhaps more disconcerting thing is that, and this is something that the Trump administration has really, really been jumping on, and that the British have really been jumping on, and I believe there's been talk about even in other parts of Europe, although I don't see it really happening, and that is that the main company that provides most of the telecommunication equipment that we use for 5G is Huawei, the company out of Shenzhen in China. And there is fear amongst the Trump administration and others that they could perhaps be putting back doors into the 5G programming or just the 5G execution that we receive, and that it can be just a tool for China to spy on us. And Huawei in the past has been taken to court by the Department of Justice for doing these kinds of things, like taking trade secrets from T-Mobile and those kinds of deals. So that aspect of what people are scared of with 5G is something that is maybe a little more controversial and maybe a little more set in reality, but it's also perhaps a ship that's already sailed. The Trump administration wants to remove telecommunication devices or just getting all of that from Huawei, and they are trying to follow the lead of the British in that regard. But that doesn't seem like something that's necessarily going to happen. But yeah, there's this sort of cybersecurity aspect to it is another thing that people are concerned about. But I think for most people, all that's going to matter is your phones are going to get a little bit faster, and the weather forecast might get a little worse.
We're visiting with Dr. Lucas Logan, Associate Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown. You are tuned to Open Journal on Pacifica Radio, the Mighty 90, listener-sponsored and commercial-free. Listener-sponsored is an important term. We're going to continue our conversation with Lucas here in just a few moments, but as we pause, Stephanie and I will be introducing the Song of the Week here, which this week is coming to us from Mike Stinson, from his album Hell and Half of Georgia. We're going to get a tune from Mike, but as we're miking him up, we want to get a couple of phone calls in to support the Open Journal program, and then we'll be back after the tune to visit with Lucas some more. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman.
So we're asking you to make that call that makes it all possible. Visa, Discover, American Express, and MasterCard are quick, easy, and painless ways of manifesting your support for this radio station. If KPFT has made a difference in your life, large or small, just like the donations, large or small, we need them all, you know. And KPFT may have turned you on to an artist you never would have learned of elsewhere in so many different genres of music, from, you know, Bhangra to beatbox to, you know, classical to folk and bluegrass and blues and all kinds of Americana streams that are broadcast over KPFT's airwaves, all the alternative types of music, all the alternative platforms for discussion, whether it's, as we mentioned earlier in the program, the Vegan World Radio, which follows Open Journal on Monday evenings each week, the Blues in Hi-Fi that precedes us. All of these are specialty programs. All of the discussions from points of view that are not commercially viable, or they would be milked by the commercial media to sell you pickup trucks and beer and mattresses and furniture and such. KPFT's selling you on the concept that we are better together as a city, as a nation, as a people, when we can learn from each other and we can break down walls of separation rather than build them, build bridges of connectivity, much like the technology we're speaking with Dr. Logan about on the program tonight. We're using new technology today that we did not have not a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And we're able to, during this time of crisis, still create fresh, real radio programs together, even remotely scattered throughout the Houston area as we are, each in our individual studio bubbles, coming together using this technology and creating radio to share with you. Maybe something you've heard on one of our talk programs, one of our discussions, one of our political platforms has impacted you and changed your life in some way. I can only speak from my personal experience and tell you that my horizons have been broadened and that my worldview is larger because of my exposure to KPFT over the course of my life. And yes, mine has been a long journey. I've been involved with KPFT since I was in college back in 1974 in KPFT's fourth year of its existence. So if you're new to KPFT, maybe just take a chance on us and invest $25, you know, pick up a KPFT keychain or something as a thank you gift to remind you, oh yeah, 90.1, that's my station. Maybe you want to get a 50th anniversary t-shirt, or maybe you want to pick up one of our celebrations from our 50th anniversary concert, where it was not produced as a big live event as it has been for many years. It was a virtual event where a lot of performers shared something from their home. And, you know, whether it was our own hometown faves, Cam Franklin and the Suffers, or the great blues legend who's performed live at KPFT and for KPFT so many times, Ruthie Foster, or other hometown heroes like Rodney Crowell and Steve Earle and Hayes Carl and many others. That's available as either a digital download, or you can get it on a thumb drive. Those are just some thank you gifts, but the greatest gift we could ever give, you got it when you found KPFT and realized, wow, this is different. This is special. This is something I will come back to. I ought to support it when I can. Well, this is now that time when you should. So 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT is that phone number.
It is just a phone call. And for those who are not using their telephone, they can always go online and make an online pledge. We do accept more than one way. I think it'll be wonderful.
KPFT.org, if you're tuning in through the interwebs, indeed. There's a multiplicity of ways. There are a multiplicity of options for you once you enter into that. And we thank you in advance, knowing that there are many, many things that you could share, whatever disposable income you have. And there are a lot of people who are in financial crisis. KPFT is not a person, but it's composed of thousands of people. And some of us are in financial crisis, and you may be. So we don't want you to take on an undue burden. We just want you to help share the load and carry KPFT forward together. And we would feel very glad if you would support the Open Journal program in however much you can. So 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for supporting us. Again, that phone number, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. As we continue our conversation with Lucas Logan, the freedom that we have at KPFT, and hopefully the wonderful stories and information that we share with you to keep you connected to the big issues that impact you daily, are in some ways under attacked, and I think they always are. But, you know, Lucas Logan, I question, as the Trump administration's new chief of U.S. international broadcasting, Michael Pack, has recently fired the heads of Voice of America, Radio Free Asia, Radio Free Europe, and the Middle East Broadcasting Network, and replaced it with their kind of own board of allies who have very little experience in journalism or broadcasting. Do you think that's something we should be worried about? Is there a new trend?
I mean, this is an ongoing trend. It's kind of happened since Trump was elected about 4 years ago now. I mean, we talked about the FCC earlier and kind of putting Andrew Pye in charge of that and then immediately gutting many rules. Net neutrality was just one of them. Plenty of other things happened. And, I mean, you can point to other agencies in the Trump administration, whether we're talking about, you know, Betsy DeVos, for instance, just coming in and gutting the Department of Education or just any number of things in the Trump administration. This is a very continuing trend, and this just happens to be with one of the media arms of the United States. If you look at what happened with Michael Pack, a little bit before that, the Trump administration started putting out stories in their Washington newsletters and such about Voice of America promoting Chinese propaganda and being perhaps just too influenced or controlled by the Chinese, mostly due with COVID-19 statistics, and saying that China was actually beginning to put things under control and get their numbers, their numbers down. And obviously, this is something that Trump harkens on a lot, as anyone who just even remotely keeps up with the news, of how defensive he is that anywhere else in the world is actually getting the virus more in control of the United States, which, I mean, absolutely, of course they are. Even if you dispute some of the Chinese statistics, it's very difficult to dispute that they haven't managed to get their numbers down at least somewhat, or at least percentage-wise compared to the United States. And I think this might have been the straw that broke the camel's back that led to Trump completely gutting Voice of America and the other agencies that you mentioned. Whether or not it's something we should be worried about, I mean, you should perhaps be worried about it if you read a lot of, you know, Voice of America, or that's like a heavily, you know, accessed news source for you. I think if you look at the stated mission of Voice of America and those others, you know, Radio Free, Asia and all of that, they, you know, put a lot of relatively unbiased stories in foreign media. They're often not even trusted in foreign media. They might even be looked at, for instance, as we look at RT, the Russian network, over where they are, where you can say that this is a lot of accurate information, but the actual country or the society that they're working in doesn't necessarily really trust what they have to say anyway. Now they will just be kind of this ridiculous PR arm of the Trump administration that you can imagine no one else in the world is really going to take with much validity or really care, you know, too much about what they have to say at this point. And so it will transform the organizations into just completely kind of a just propaganda arm of the Trump administration. Some of the people they've put in there, I always think there was someone in there who's now, I think with Voice of America, who once sued a library over doing Harry Potter story time or something for teaching Satanism in a public space.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's these kind of the same kooks that we've been seeing all these years are now in there. So I think if you're with Voice of America or Radio Free Asia or the others, you should absolutely be, you know, worried about the kind of propaganda spread that's going to go through that right now. But as far as it being something, you know, that is really significant in the sense of the mission of those organizations, as far as it being something that's going to somehow reduce U.S. influence in the world or anything like that, I would be skeptical there. But absolutely, Voice of America has been gutted now and just put ideologues into place. And so it's kind of hard to imagine them really bouncing back from that, although I suppose it could happen under a different administration. But, he's basically destroy those news networks. Yes.
You know, I have a question with you for that, sort of on both sides. I do feel that we should have some optimism about where we can go as a country and how we do rebound from these things. And like what I'll ask on both levels, what do you think it would take for us to sort of pivot into what could be considered a positive trajectory And then what would we look like, or what would be a comparable city, state, country if we continue down this path? Like, where do we look like we're going under this current route, and where could we go, or how could we get better?
Are you talking about just in terms of media, like Voice of America, or?
Well, like media, technology, sort of the voice of the individuals versus the voice of the corporation. Where are these policies sort of enacted? Like, where would we be in 20 years if we don't step up, speak up, and change it? And then what should we do to make a difference? Is it about voting? Is it about power as a consumer? Where do we sort of empower ourselves to be different?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm just generally like pessimistic about a lot of this stuff. If I can point to anything, though, that is sort of a ray of hope that you could possibly look at, are the recent hearings that we're starting to see really come into place against Facebook, Apple, Google, and Amazon, where we may actually be seeing just kind of the beginning of some kind of antitrust muscle again in the United States. You're seeing, all these corporations, these CEOs are all being hauled in at once in front of Congress, which is something that was probably very difficult for Congress to arrange, considering just how powerful, you know, Jeff Bezos and Zuckerberg and the crew, you know, just how powerful they are and how hard it is to actually get them into Washington. And so I think if we're looking at anything that could be possible like that, as far as just antitrust and breaking up these companies or their power, I think that's something that could be very significant. For instance, you know, with Facebook, we talk about all the fake news and misinformation out there and just the power that Facebook has to change an algorithm and wipe out a whole slew of news sites just based on, you know, their new preferences for what people see. And so any ability to rein that in would be somewhat important. So I think that being able to kind of reduce the power of just those handful of corporations would be maybe the one positive thing that we could do. That doesn't really have a lot to do with the state propaganda aspect of something like what's happening with Voice of America. But as I said, something like, just voting in a different administration would probably take a lot of that out of play. But I think the most important thing right now is antitrust in terms of reducing the power of the main tech companies that are controlling all of our information right now. And if you look at some of the things those companies are getting hit for, things like with Facebook, not just the misinformation and the fake news, but just allowing companies or just allowing scammers to say, just put up, you know, fake Costco or Kroger gift cards on Facebook and people downloading those and trying to take those to the store. If you look at Amazon, essentially putting its own products up top after they've copycatted everyone else's products and made them just a little bit cheaper, or have glitches in their algorithm that completely wipes brands off of the site. The same thing with Google and spreading misinformation and scams and all of these kinds of things. If there's a strong enough antitrust impetus or even something that is scary enough for these companies to perhaps rein in some of that kind of the fake or just dangerous media and awful business practices that they currently have, that could be one ray of sunshine as far as us having sort of a better media landscape as far as that goes in the future.
Mm, it sounds like we need Teddy Roosevelt back.
Yeah.
So, Lucas Logan, recently the Houston Chronicle reported Sinclair Broadcasting Group, America's second largest network, is engaged in what sounds like a running disinformation campaign against Dr. Fauci. Sinclair spokesman Michael Padovano said, Sinclair hopes to promote free speech and, quote, add context and other viewpoints by airing segments of a debunked conspiracy theory documentary so outlandish that even Facebook and YouTube, Twitter, and Vimeo have pulled it. So between Fox and Sinclair and Trump's new favorite, the One America Network, we have almost like an enormous state-run media agency in the making. Should we be extremely worried, or more importantly, what can we do about it?
Okay, the Sinclair thing you should definitely be worried about. We've talked about this previously on here when I've come in, and that's that Sinclair is essentially allowed to buy up just tons and tons of local networks, mm-hmm. and are then able to run kind of this Trump TV, as it was supposed to be, before he was elected and had to become the president and couldn't just run Trump TV. But with that, they're able to just produce lots and lots of just disinformation, things that are completely on the side of Trump, run those on local news networks under the guise that they are from a local media station, but actually they're from Sinclair National headquarters. And so you get those things like that, the Dr. Fauci slander campaign, which I believe Don Trump Jr. Recently got banned from Twitter or suspended from Twitter for promoting, if that shows you kind of how bad this information is. As far as what can be done with them, I mean, with Sinclair, the only answer would be to, again, more antitrust, mm-hmm. to break this up. And that would be something that would probably be very difficult for any administration to do, particularly one like, say, a Biden administration that's not going to be that particularly radical or really want to step on too many toes on the other side of the aisle. See, the difference is with what I was talking about with the tech companies, a lot of Republicans want to break them up too. It's a very bipartisan effort, even mm-hmm. though the Republicans may have very different reasons for wanting to do that. The impetus is still there on both sides. It would be hard to imagine that with something like Sinclair. You would need probably a fully Democratic, House and Senate, and lots of support and political will to do something like this. And it would be hard to imagine, how that would be under the current makeup of the system that we have in place. But that would probably be the best or only way really to do that. Having control of just all of those local networks like that is something very unprecedented and something that is probably going to be very hard to undo.
Mm-hmm.
So not to be so positive about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, stay tuned. We're speaking with Dr. Lucas Logan, Associate Professor of Communication Studies from the University of Houston downtown. You're tuned to Open Journal on Pacifica Radio 90.1 FM. And thank you for joining us. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. Lucas Logan, we'd love to have you back. You really kept us connected in this evolving and unfortunate telecommunication battle and war, I think we are in the middle of.
Well, it is good seeing you, Lucas, even though we're staring at a little box on a desk and we're in different parts of the city, all of us on the Open Journal team here Zooming together. And it seems that this version of the new normal may be with us moving forward with all these teleconferencing services like Zoom and Skype and FaceTime and all these others more or less now here to stay. How do you see this in the... You're a professor. How do you see that impacting school and healthcare and changing jobs and government and everything down the road? Are we going to be living in this odd version of new normal? Put on your, prognosticator's cap.
Okay, well, I'd say we'd have at least another year or so of it. mm-hmm. See how it goes. I think some things will be permanently transformed. If you look at a lot of jobs, realizing how much more productive employees have been from home, you're going to see a lot more telecommuting because, for instance, with Silicon Valley, there's been a real push to now that they realize they don't have to pay these really expensive rental fees in San Francisco to get their employees to do anything. You'll see companies like Google and Twitter already saying that they're going to just give employees the options to stay at home and essentially save them a lot of money in renting, maybe even de-gentrify San Francisco in the process. Yeah, I think with schools, we're going to really see how that goes. I'm predicting probably more disaster than anything over the next few months as we see just what just happened with Major League Baseball happening in about every school in the United States that manages to stay open. That's my personal opinion. I do believe that this is something that's going to be with us for at least a year or so. However, I do think once this kind of passes, eventually in 2070 or whenever it is. No, but really just in a year or two, I think never underestimate the people's ability to not learn a lesson from anything. Right. And that we'll probably go back to kind of our old normal ways, I would say, in a year or two.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't get enough traffic. It does seem that people have not got that out of their system, so I'm sure that's going to come back soon.
So, Dr. Lucas Logan, how important in these evolving media landscape times? Is it for a voice of a Pacifica radio to continue to be here, to be present, to be supported by its listeners so that these voices such as yours and others can be heard in an unfiltered way?
It's absolutely important. Independent media like this has probably never been more important than ever before, especially being able to go over, you know, FM airwaves and just information that even though you can get it online, you don't have to rely on the internet. And so it's something that I would say is, yeah, extremely important. Yeah, again, more so than ever before, as we see, you know, just all of our tech companies and all of our state-run media just in a permanent cycle of disinformation and just broken algorithms.
Well, all right. Well, we thank you so much for joining us for the hour. It's been a special visit with you. As always, we appreciate your time and congratulations on achieving tenure at U of H downtown. We look forward to continued visits and information sharing from you as we move into whatever this new normal may be. It's been good spending time with you, Lucas.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been great seeing you again.
Yeah. Well, folks, it is about time to wrap up the Open Journal for this week. I'm Dwayne Bradley, and I'm asking you in one last blast here to go to the phones and give a support of whatever level you can share easily and quickly using Visa, Discover, American Express, MasterCard. The folks on the other end of the phone can help you in just a couple of minutes go through this process and transform you from a listener, which you already are, to a listener member, a sponsor of this radio program, this radio station. $25 or more makes you a voting member of the foundation. And I mean, there's implications involved in that in terms of our board of directors. And as I mentioned, there's a little bag of gifts that can be had at various different levels, beginning at $25. But the important thing is we're trying to raise a few hundred dollars here for Open Journal so that KPFT management sees through the manifestation of some financial support that the community actually values this program as much as those of us who put it together value it. And we're all sponsoring members as well, but we can't carry it alone. So we're asking you to share the note with us here and do a little bit so that we can continue to share this amazing media resource that is so rare, so special. And I hope you appreciate it as much as we do. That phone number is 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT, 526-5738.
Yes, and I agree with Dwayne and just sort of reinforcing that now more than ever, your support is needed. This station is brought together for you, by you, and through your continued support and giving. We are all volunteers. We are dedicated production staff, including Rambling Rick Campbell, Susan Phillips, and Maverick. Of course, I'm Stephanie, and we couldn't do this without you, our supporters. Open Journal theme music is provided by Kevin McLeod. And thanks for your support.
Mm-hmm. And do subscribe to our podcast, KPFTOJ. And if you'd like to drop feedback to us, we'd love to hear from you. And as always, we like to leave you with a thought to carry you through the week. This comes to us from Francis Perkins, who said, "Most of man's problems on this planet in the long history of the race have been met and solved, either partially or as a whole, by experiment based on common sense and carried out with courage." Take care of each other.